I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Get to start today off with a good guest, someone I've been trying to track down. Thank you, Danielle, because Danielle is the homie. She's been chasing Nick with me for a couple years.
Oh man.
But we got him here, man. The man of many hats. Welcome to the show, Nick Cannon, man.
Appreciate you, man.
Being here, bro.
Pleasure to meet you, dog.
It's a pleasure.
Nick, literally.
This is our first time meeting. You probably met
him. Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, this is our first time meeting.
Nah.
So, I ain't met you before, bro.
It's funny that you say that. We met in Chicago at the 100th, what was that? At the minister's...
We at the Criterion, we sure did. You sure right.
And you forgot that.
I forgot that. Yeah. I was so in awe with the, about the minister, I forgot. You know what I'm saying? We did. Me and Al went.
Yep.
Al Harrington, you sure right.
Blame it on the weed, not his heart.
Criterion.
Yeah, okay. So, Nick, I mean, rapper, actor, host, comedian, father, tell me what a day in the life of you is like.
Man, I mean, like you said, you the first and foremost is fatherhood. I'm wake up. Well, crazy thing, I actually wake up. I'm at the office at like 2 a.m. Like, I'm on that circadian clock stuff. So, I get up before, my day start before everybody.
So, what time you go to bed at?
Probably when the sun go down.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Just for a few hours, because then I'm up and then, you know, meditating, working out, doing everything. Usually my show start around like 6 a.m.
Okay.
But then like everybody else day, once I knock all that stuff out, then I take the kids to school.
Okay.
At probably like that, getting them together at like 7:30-ish, drop everybody off by 9, and I'm back to the office. And, you know, we doing... This type of stuff all day long based off of what show is in production or, you know, what artist is in town, and then we move like that.
We had Simba on the show on Wednesday. Young, talented artist. He told us he's headed on tour with you, and I kind of look at you as like the our generation of kind of Keenan Ivory Wayans. Like, you have a knack for finding young black talent and giving them the platform to go on and succeed. Talk to me where that kind of mentality came from.
Man, too much is given, much is required. We blessed so we could be a blessing. A lot of people helped me out on the way up. And, you know, it's now, to me, I feel like I'm at that point in my life where I just want to build platforms to see other people succeed. Mm-hmm. Like, just help others. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of people talk about what we need to do for each other, but, you know.
Who's actually doing it?
Yeah, right. And it's just like, man, it's just out here just, if I can get it, I know the next kid could get it because they know all that I know. And now I passed it to them, and now they got some stuff that they can offer up. So that's really what it's all about for me.
I mean, I look back and, you know, obviously what you've started, and we'll get into all that, but I look like 5-10 years from now and we'll see stars such as DC and some other people and like, where did he get his start at? And a lot of those roads are going to lead back to you. And I just want to give you your flowers for that, because I think that's really dope, man. The opportunity you provide for people who, like you said, may not have it or may not have just the means of it, and you provide that and give a lot of people an outlet to, you know, get their shit together.
That's really what generational wealth is. You know what I mean? You ain't even got to necessarily be something connected directly to your lineage or your DNA, but when you can build platforms that people can provide for their families, right. And then, therefore, the offshoot to that, I mean, that's real community right there.
Mm-hmm. That's a hell of a comparison you just made. That was great, dog.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, I've always looked at him that way. Like, yeah, I just love he gives people opportunities, man.
Yeah.
Good looking.
Yeah. I mean, on steroids, though.
Yeah. It's heavy.
San Diego.
Yeah.
That's where you grew up, born and raised in San Diego. It's a rumor that your pops was OG on the Southwest side.
A rumor.
Southeast side. Yeah. Talk about your upbringing.
Man, yeah, I mean, it's one of them things where every hood around America is the same, you know what I mean? I actually got the opportunity to be raised in Southern California, in Southeast San Diego, also in North Carolina, moved around, and you know, I've been in the game for a minute, so grew up in Atlanta, New York, you know, like all throughout my teenage years, I was kind of just moving autonomously like that, just as a youngster, so, Southeast is definitely what raised me and birthed me, and it's interesting because when you hear about San Diego, you think Mini Coopers and surfboards for people who ain't never really been down
that's
there.
That's where Jelani came from. So yeah, Mini Coopers and surfboards for sure.
But it's quite different. It's right there next to the border, so you can imagine how much work going back and forth and people really getting to it. So, but it was all love. It was a community that's disenfranchised, but you know, it kind of gave me that upbringing of raised in the church, you know, projects, all of that, you know, so we didn't know we didn't have,
right?
Because it was still community, you know what I mean?
And yeah, love.
Yeah. So, you know, my parents were teenagers. They had me while they was in high school. My pops got his life together after he got locked up and moved to North Carolina. That's how we got out there, and then, you know, my grandmother was the matriarch of the family and was really raising us all. You know, she was a grandmother, you know, before she was 40 type situation. So but it had this unorthodox sense of family that always felt like there was love no matter what was going on.
What you was interested in growing up, was it sport? I mean, like, you was always automatically interested in music? Like, it was a sport?
Yeah, like
anything?
With church, man, you know, anything that was kind of like my entry point into like audiences and even entertainment, because it was like you see that congregation and you know we come from a line of ministers. My father's in the ministry, you know, he eventually got into the ministry and stuff, so I would just peep, you know, controlling a crowd. Even I was like 4 years old wanting to, you know, tell everybody to stand when it was time for offering and all of that type of stuff. And then really just seeing all of the instruments around too. My mother's father was actually a jazz musician and the minister of music. So, and he passed when I was 8 and left me all of these instruments.
Oh, really? Okay.
So yeah, so I got an opportunity to start getting down at like 8 years old. And then from there, I was in love with music, DJing by the time I got into high school, throwing parties, making mixtapes, that type of stuff. So it was just, the music was in me from the gate.
So you're saying we all know you started early and you like experienced a lot of things. What stuck? Like what stuck when you knew like I made it, like this is gonna get me there? Like,
man,
because you was doing everything.
I ain't never really think about it like that, because it was always like this is just, it's in me. It was a passion just as an artist. So I never even thought of it as like a career, you know what I mean? Or even like, but I knew I had a hustle about me. So like, you know, we did whatever we had to do to make some money. You know, my mom's was married to one of the biggest D-boys in the city, so I kind of watched how he moved, and that was like, oh, we good. Like, it was, so I was never thinking about making it out the hood, because the hood was feeding us, so
right.
I didn't have that mentality of wanting to get out, you know what I mean? So even as we got older, and it was just like, I just wanted to put on for it. Mm. So it was, when it started to be, you know, when everybody starts saying I was exceptional in certain spaces and winning talent shows, and like, I would enter a talent show and I would come in first and second, like as a stand-up and as an artist.
Yeah.
Like, so.
That's dope.
So I would just, it was unique. And I was just out there hustling. I didn't never think of it as a career. I was just having fun. Mm. So even in high school, like I'd be, you know, at Jamie Foxx's comedy festival in Atlanta, and like had to be at school at Monday morning. People wouldn't even believe me. I was like, right. So it was just part of my upbringing. So I never had that mentality like, oh, I made it. I was just like, yo, I'm having a great time. Yeah. Like, I'm just having fun. Yeah. So I never had that destination of like, yo, let's get out, or let's make it, or now I made enough money to where it was never like that for me.
Mm-hmm. That's deep. That's deep.
I still be on the block. I mean, I still go, like, because it's still
right.
The family is still, you know, I try to get down there to San Diego as much as possible, and it's everybody the same. We still move the same way.
How did, a lot of people don't know you did stand up.
Yeah.
How did that start? Like, you doing stand up?
Opening up for the preacher man, my pops, you know what I mean? Like, telling Jesus jokes in the church. Like, real talk. Like, and, because I was young, my pops always would see me doing stuff with the music and stuff. And he'd be like, man, every kid in the projects want to be a rapper. Like, you funny. You can control a crowd. You can talk to people. And he's like, do that. Think outside the box. Be different. And then he would be the type of dude that, like, would put me on the spot. He had a little, at the time, he had a televangelist show. You know,
one televangelist, yeah,
trying to you know, sell Bless oil and all that type of stuff on public.
Get your prayer kerchief.
Yeah, facts. And I would, you know, it was on cable access, so to be on cable access, you had to go to have a show. You had to go through the workshops and learn how to work all this stuff. So he put me through the workshops to be his crew. So I was running the camera, setting up the lights, doing the audio, set design at like 12. You know what I mean? And so, and his reward to me with that would be like, all right, well, now that you went through all of that and worked on my show, you can, you know, have a few hours in the television studio. And I would just be telling jokes, making music, and shit would actually come on TV on, you know, channel 300 or some wild shit like that. But it was like, through that, I was like, oh, wow, I'm junior high school producing television.
That's crazy.
Telling jokes. And then from there, that's when, you know, it's talent shows and all the stuff I was saying, where people just started to take notice.
Mm. You spoke on it earlier, your grandfather passing at the age of 8.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of your inspiration behind the music. Talk to us about his impact he left on you.
I mean, realistically, it was more just about the you know, being 8, you don't really, you know,
yeah.
But the fact that what he left me.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And that was always my connection to him, to be like, oh, I can get to know him better through all of this equipment, really.
Right.
And that's, you know, to have that level of equipment for an 8-year-old in the hood, you know what I mean? Right. I had everything. Right. I had guitars, trumpets, synthesizers, drums, like all stuffed into like a closet in a, like, because we didn't even have, you know, it was a project, so we didn't have a lot of
space.
Yeah. But it was just so much so that I would be, even for years, I would go in there and be like, dang, I wonder how we play this or how to figure this out. So that in itself, man, just in teaching myself how to play and then be able to go to church or whatever event and get down with other musicians and stuff. Mm. I would have never had that if he wouldn't have never left me none of that stuff.
You break into music officially, Jive Records 2001. What was that experience like for you?
Man, y'all going back. I got to update my resume. I don't even remember, to be honest, because that was so much going on in my life at the time. And I have, like I said, I have been hustling, and, you know, I was around in the 90s. So I was, you know, trying to figure out how to, you know, get signed to Death Row and Bad Boy, all of that. Like, I remember being, you know, on Sunset Boulevard, the Night of the Soul Train Awards, you know, like, and then like literally when it was like how it looked in the movies, where like Snoop and them was on one side of the street, Biggie and them was on another, Leah was at the House of Blues, like, so growing, I felt like I was already in
the mix, right?
For since like the mid 90s, and I was just that kid that you would always see, like, what is this kid doing here? Like, almost like the water boy type energy, but instead of water, I was passing out CDs and stuff like that. So by the time the deal came around, I had already been signed to Will Smith. I had been, you know, did the joint with Jamie Foxx. I had already been on Nickelodeon and all of that stuff. So I actually started Nickelodeon and Jive's record label. And that's what 2001 was. So it was like, it was interesting because like Nickelodeon was this billion-dollar company and they was doing all that, but they didn't have a record label. I was like, yo, let's just call it Nick Records. And then that's how, and I, you know, kind of had the distribution through Jive. And so even then, I was more of an executive. I wasn't even trying to be an artist. So it was just like, I wanted to produce all of the acts on Nickelodeon and put them out, because that was also during the time where Disney was booming with Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera,
Justin Timberlake,
you know, NSYNC. So I was like, yo, we should do that over here and then kind of give it more of an urban spin. So that's how that came about.
Just thinking early, right? That's what I'm
saying. Early. So, who were, I mean, obviously the grind was in your DNA, but who were some of the people you looked up to in the space?
Man, just Puff, Jermaine Dupri, like those are the dudes that I wanted to emulate coming up. Like I just, you know, just being behind the scenes. And, you know, I was signing all the little cute girls in my high school, telling them I'd give them a record deal. I don't know what the hell I did. That was my game. You know
that's
what I mean?
That's a mean hustle, too. You can tell a girl you can put her on a record or a movie. You good.
Yeah, But even more, I didn't ever want to be the dude in the front. Like, even I was, you know, I was producing beats for the homies. Let me be the DJ. Let me be the dude that could press up the mixtapes and sell them out the trunk of my mom's car. Like, that movement felt like what I aspired to be. But once, I don't know, man. Like, it was just one of those things. I looked up to people like Quincy Jones. You know what I mean? I would do my research on the OG. And
the
just,
greats.
So, yeah, like, even Russell Simmons and people, like, who were creators of culture, who had a true impact on our lifestyle and what we did, like, so those are the people that, and I mean, even still to this day, when we think about the individuals who shaped our culture, it's them, whether they were producing the music, producing the films,
no matter what they were doing,
and even, I mean, even, and as I got even older, and I started to tap in with cats like Harry Belafonte and Dick Gregory and all, like, even as much of they were showmen, they were producers, they were entrepreneurs, they were, their business acumen was next level, especially when you think about all the adversity that they were up against in those times. They had to be able to be one person for you on camera, but was really running a full operation, and putting on, not just for the business, but even for the community and the activism space too.
I mean, it seems like you were someone that grew up knowing how to be in front and behind of the camera, so it was only right when you started your own label, Incredible Entertainment. Talk to us about how that started
up. Yeah, it was, man, it's one of them scenarios where I've had several companies. Like I said, since high school, I was always trying to do something in here and there, and then you can have multiple labels and multiple production companies, but at one point, it was like probably mid-2000s or probably like right when I got married, I was like, man, I want to just consolidate every business that I have and bring it into one. So because, you know, I had television production, I had Mr. Renaissance, I had Can I Ball Entertain, all of this stuff. And it was just, even as you know, you get to your business manager, then you got to sign all of this. And I was like, man, how do we make this just one big conglomerate? And my goal was like, yo, I just want one incredible multimedia, just one-stop shop, and probably that's how it all came together. So probably like around 2009, 2010, I just consolidated everything. And then interestingly enough, that's also 2010 is when I got in business with Monster, and we created the Incredible Headphones. And
then
you know, that when we went on to sell like $200 million in headphones in a few years. And, you know, it was kind of, it was on the same pace. I mean, Monster was the same company that Created Beats by Dre. So we I was the more affordable. Mm-hmm. We was in Walmart where they was at, you know, all of
there's
the higher
more, there's
end,
more
so.
Walmart people than there are Apple
exactly.
Store people.
So I learned how to build the brand off the heels of that. So it became more than just a company, it became a brand. That's how we moving.
Mm. Love it.
98, you land a role and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
The talk about the process of auditioning and getting that role, because you know I'm starting acting too, so
I see. Just salute on that.
Appreciate it.
It's funny. I never auditioned. It was one of them scenarios, just what we've been saying. I was behind the scenes. I started at my manager and the producers from Nickelodeon saw me doing stand up at the Improv on Melrose when I was like 15. And I was the kid in there, you know, I was going up, Dave Chappelle and, you know, Chris Tucker, everybody go, every Monday used to be lit. It was Mo' Better Mondays, and it was like, that was the black night, and I was a 15-year-old kid in there doing stand-up. So they was like, yo, this kid got a real voice. Mm-hmm. So took a couple meetings, and they gave me an opportunity to, you know, do the warm-up, do pretty much my set, you know, before the actual actors and everybody came out. Mm. And I would have to put on for like 3 hours, and it'd be so much, like, people would be mad when they'd have to go back to shooting. Like, the warm-up kid is more entertaining than what's going on the show. So from there, I was the warm-up, and then they start asking me, you know, for help with the jokes and concepts, because I'm still a high school student. So they was like, well, he knows his voice better than a lot of these adult writers. So they allowed me, they gave me an opportunity to have a staff writer's position at, like, as a teen. I was the youngest staff writer in television history. And then from there, I was writing for all that, and Kenan and Kel and a bunch of different shows. And like I said, I was started writing my own show. So it was almost by default that I was on the show, because I was behind the scenes as the warm-up and the writer. Mm. And, you know, even by then, I kind of just was like, yo, I'm going to just have fun. I wasn't trying to be the star of the show. Right. And I was just there. And I think that's even when you think like how SNL and a lot of that work, like they just find their lane. And I was just really, as a kid, trying to find my lane amongst, you know, 10 other talented young people.
It seemed like all this shit was just destined. Fun, but I'm saying that they sound fun. You mean like he was having fun,
yeah,
and then the money started coming with the fun,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't really feel. I mean, although it's hours and time, it don't really feel like work because you love to do it anyway.
That's exactly right. That's how I live my life, even still to this day. Mm. It's like, I mean, if I ain't having fun, I ain't doing it. Mm. You know,
straight up.
That's a blessing to have that level of freedom. Absolutely. To where you can wake up and say, I'm gonna do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not enjoying myself, I want to have a delightful disposition so I can fuck with everybody and be cool and like. Nobody like to show up to something where they feel like they forced to be there. So it's like, and I think, you know, one of the quotes say is like, money don't make you happy, happy makes you money.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's my first time hearing that.
That's a good one. I like it.
That's my first time hearing that. How did you feel when you first landed your first show, the Nick Cannon show?
Again, I created it. So it was, you know, I was 18, 19 years old. It was an opportunity. It's funny though, too, because I had just had a show. I was signed to Will Smith before that through Warner Brothers, and I had a 6-episode commitment for a show that I wrote called The Loose Cannon. I remember I pitched it to Will, and I was like, yo, it's like The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but me in the military school. And he was like, oh, I'm rocking with it. And then we put it all together. I'm watching how, Quincy Jones come to the pilot and all that stuff. 6-episode commitment. I'm fresh out of high school. I'm like, I'm on. You know what I mean? First thing I do, I get a big check. I buy a Range Rover. You know what I mean? Will's like, man, don't do that. Like, you just do it. He's like, I made that same mistake when I was your age. I was like, man, whatever. I just got 6-episode commitment. We was coming on right after the Jamie Foxx show on the WB. Mm-hmm. That was my scheduled slot. Like, and so I'm lit. All of a sudden, they get new people at Warner Brothers. Things shift. They go in a whole different direction for that whole block. And my show don't get picked up.
That's crazy. So
how many episodes did you go through?
We just got one off.
Yeah. Damn.
I was heartbroken. Like, that was probably in the industry one of my first big, like, heartbreaks. Because I'm on. I just bought a Range Rover. I'm trying to get my mama a house, all of that stuff. But so what that did, that instantly humbled me at an early age. So when I was like, bump it, I'm not gonna rely on nobody else. I'm gonna just continue to create my own. And that's when I created the Nick Cannon Show and took it over, you know, across the street to Nickelodeon. So, and even though I knew that grind, that grind was definitely harder than like coming on after Jamie Foxx. Like, right. I thought I was gonna be in that camp, mm-hmm. like when it was Jamie Foxx and the Wayans mm-hmm. brothers yep. and Steve Harvey Show. Yep. Like, it was during that time. And I was like, oh, I'm next up. And I was like, dang, Will was right. I had to get rid of the Range Rover.
I was about to say, you had to get that shit back.
It took more, have moved back in with moms for a little bit, like, just because I ran through it. And I thought it was, I thought it was about to
keep
popping.
Yeah, it's supposed to keep coming.
And I was like, tail end of the 90s. So I was like, by the time I was like, I ain't going to let that happen to me.
How old are you?
Shoot, I'm 42.
Okay, yeah, we're the same age. Yeah. Okay.
You are not the same age.
What are you talking about?
How old are you?
42.
Really?
I'm 3 years
older than you?
Old ass nigga, what you mean?
I'm 3 years older than you, bro.
Yeah.
I did not know I was 3 years older than you. Damn, old ass nigga.
He said you were not his age.
Maybe I thought we was the same age all this time.
Nah.
No wonder. Yeah, I didn't know that.
2000.
I thought you was an old motherfucker too, bro.
Mm-mm. You see all them grades? You don't see no grades over here.
Oh,
player.
I see some now.
Okay. not as many.
No, not as many. Yeah. My shit, salt and pepper.
Yeah, mostly salt. But 2005, Wildin' Out. I mean, a cult classic. I got a chance to.
He needs to be on Wild Out. This is one of the funniest motherfuckers.
I came on it, bro.
No, I didn't see that episode.
Yeah,
I didn't see that episode.
Talking shit.
I didn't see that episode.
You need to be on there.
Yeah, I'm gonna out rap some motherfuckers when I get on there. But you, this motherfucker is a comedian, bro.
Man,
I know.
I didn't really stretch out on that show, though. I was, because I was such
Thank
a fan.
You, I would have heard about it.
I was just coming to the show to chill, and then someone says, like, Nick wants you on the show. I was like, I can't. I was blow too. I'm like, no, I'm just coming. It was during Fashion Week. I was like, I'm just coming to watch. So, and I went and talked to you. Just come on the show. Nick Todd. I was like, all right, fuck, man, let's go.
So you needed to plead the fifth and everything.
You need to pass some of them insults to other people, because I take them every day on the show. You got to spread them shits around.
But Wildin' Out. The thought process and that, how that became, and it's still doing what it does.
Man, we 20 seasons
damn,
in already.
Damn, we just talking about five seasons in, 20. Yeah.
Nah, we started back then, and it was really the way it happened. Like, nobody saw the vision. So what I did really was at that time when I was bubbling, kind of doing my thing, and I'd be hanging at the comedy club, off of Pico, and it'd be all of these other cats. They're like looking at me like, hey, put us on, do something, you know what I mean? And I'm like, all right. And I was, at the time, it was Cat Williams, Kevin Hart, D-Ray Davis. Like, we all kind of came up and at the same time. So we'd just be backstage, literally freestyling, talking shit, talking about each other, mama, like really just putting that energy on. I was like, yo, this is the show
right
here.
For real.
I was like, so I rented out the comedy club, got some cameras. We promoted it, had everybody come out. It was like me, Chris Spencer, a couple other people that was kind of structured the, what we was going to do in turn, us just bullshitting into an actual show. And then, me and my dude, now Evans, kind of put the logo together. And I remember creating the logo. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is going to be iconic. And then... took it to MTV, and they're like, oh, we get what you're talking about now. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to own my brand, because y'all could have paid for it, but I paid for it. So from there, we rest is history. We almost 500 episodes.
That's crazy.
Later.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com.
Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights' sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When it first started, you were going out and finding talent. The word was out, they were coming to you. How did you start getting talent?
It was the homies. Okay. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, back then, like, if you even watched, like, the first season of Wildin' Out, like, it was a broke Kevin Hart, you know what I mean? It was, I think at the time we had, in the first, like the pilot, we had Loon on, like we had, it was just like, people was like, yo, come fuck
the homies,
with us.
Yeah, come chill.
And then that was the thing too, because at that time, MTV had just had like Punk'd. So like Ashton Kutcher was their star. So it was like, you know, and we was like the stepchild to Punk. So everybody was going on Punk, like Justin Timberlake and Beyonce. And we was like, yo, let's just put Lil Wayne on all, you know what I mean? Like it was hip hop. And for when MTV wasn't fucking with it, realistically, we was building the culture. So people was like, nah, I rock with what y'all got going over there. And then just every season, it just started getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, because this the question, this next question. I want to know who, I want to know who has the job. Like, I want to apply for that job to hire.
I mean, similar to what Dr. Buss did with the Lakers, creating the Laker girls.
Yeah.
You have created the Wildin' Out girls.
Yeah.
And
this the question. You,
everybody relax.
Hey, it was like, I had a foundation event maybe 4 years ago with Snoop, and I hit Nick and his team up. I'm like, Nick, we need some women for this pool party. And then when I tell you, they came through in flying colors, bro.
I can take no credit.
Who has the job to hire the Wildin' Out girls? How can I apply?
You want to be a Wildin' Out girl?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I want to be around them.
Nah, I mean, honestly, you said you gave her a shout out at the beginning.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Between the casting at Paramount and, you know, VH1 and MTV, but Danielle's been...
She's super dope.
You know, CNC casting, Rosen, they've been doing their thing since season one. Mm-hmm. And she's a great person. Great relationship. She brings a lot of the talent, you know, on the show. And then at the same time, she has her own casting company. And everything I do, she casts. And it's a delicate thing, especially when you believe, like, even with, like, the Me Too era and all of that stuff, we always want to make sure that we're super respectful and we create an environment for the women.
Don't bring him around.
To be comfortable. But even in that scenario, you can't. I mean, we don't have every rapper on the show. Right. But and it's because of the people. Everybody's good people with good energy.
Energies, yeah,
and that's the thing when you when everybody feels like they're treated well, and that's the vibe. So, and I attest that all to her. She's just somebody that knows how to bring good people together and make sure everybody head on straight and ain't on that bullshit.
Talk to us about a wild and out shoot day. You guys shoot multiple shows one day.
Three episodes in a day.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and you know, probably. Cause it's like a sport. So we do like, you know, the rehearsal, or we call it the workout or the workshop, like a week or two before, okay. Just putting it on its feet, getting your improv muscles together. So, cause none of it's written, we just going off the top. But you got to know how to play the game. You got to keep the speed, keep the rhythm, keep the flow going. And so then by the time we get to shooting the show, and second it's whatever nature. Happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get to see it. You know, it's you get to see it happening in real time. If somebody say something that ain't funny, we gonna make fun of you for not being funny.
Okay, they gonna let you know.
If somebody stumble, we gonna laugh. You know, if some but it, and you just see everybody's skill set and talent, and it just go. You know, it what you see on TV is how long it really took us to shoot it. I mean, it'd be a little stop down here and there, but our goal is to make it feel like it's live, so we can knock three out and we done.
I mean, obviously you've had a lot of success in the entertainment space, but did Wildin' Out surprise you on just its longevity and the ability to be a platform for so many different people to branch off and do their thing?
I mean, it did. I didn't see it as where it is now. You know what I mean? I knew it was going to be successful. I knew it was going to be special. I knew the logo was going to be iconic and all of that. But I didn't see, like, man, we just sold out Madison Square Garden. We sold out the Staples Center a few times. You know, we on tour every summer and people come out for it. We got board games. We got restaurants. You know what I mean? I opened up one in Miami, San Diego. We opening one in LA now. It's just like, I didn't know that IP was going, you know, diversify in so many different places. Mm-hmm. So. And the fact that it could continue to go on and on, and even in the digital space now, it's really strong and giving others opportunities. I mean, that's what I always set out to do initially, was to give my friends jobs. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, it's funny, I'm hiring some of their kids and putting them on the show at this point. So to have it across multiple generations and still going, and a lot of people feel like it's still new. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's crazy to see, like, you know, I got a 11-year-old son, and him and his friends talking about
my twins. Watch, they 14. Yeah, so like, it's just like that next level. It's just like the next generation.
It. Yeah. So, and that's the vibe to where it's like, yo, I'm now like, all right, well, how long can this joint rock for? Like,
let it run.
I remember it was like, yeah, I'm gonna do 100 episodes and I'm done. And then I was like, nah, I'm gonna go ahead and try to get to 10 seasons. All right, let's go 12. You know, like now, you know, like I said, we surpassed 20.
Syndicated, right?
Yeah. Once you get to that level,
for life.
Like, that show going to be on forever.
I love it. I mean, obviously, you know, 500 plus shows, memorable people on it. Like, anything come to mind when I ask that? Favorite show, maybe?
I mean, like I said, but your episode was fire. I don't know what you're talking about.
You got active.
It's one of the classics. When you go online and you see the reels, like classic moments, you got some classic, because you was up there talking that shit. Man, we didn't expect you to say some certain things. But Snoop, you know, Snoop been there a few times. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Probably it's Snoop. And he one of the people that he don't care. He'll get up there and joke with you, but he'll also freestyle.
Get on
and,
you, know. Yeah.
So Snoop is probably the most.
He'll ha until you say some shit. He gonna get on your ass.
Facts.
Yeah. You got an opportunity to work with Jordan to create a sneaker. How did that partnership come together?
Man, that's interesting, because it's funny. The joint that I worked on was a Jordan 7, and it was like all of the years. I think we were doing. It was almost like a commemorative, all the years of Wildin' Out. So I had like the red, I had the gold, the platinum, like it was dope. And I had a few pair, and they was like, they're gonna make mad limited joints for the cast members, and we was gonna give it to the guests that season. And I don't know what happened. Like, this was like pre-pandemic. And then I started seeing online where somebody had designed some fours, and it was calling them the Wildin' Out fours. And I was like, them ain't the ones that I designed. So, like, I could, you know, that sneaker culture is so, it's real. Like, you got to really be about it. So, I'm still waiting for the Wildin' Out Sevens to come out. But it was, you know, it was cats who grew up loving sneakers and specifically.
Can you call Mike?
We're Jays.
He got Mike's number. Can you call Mike and ask what's up with the Incredible Sevens?
I sure can act like it.
Nah, but that, you know, that's a world where I was just excited to even be able to create. But the ones that everybody talking about now, I ain't had nothing to do with those.
I pick up my phone and look who texts me. Look at the second message.
He sent me one too. I seen it. Oh, Steve from Jordan.
That's Jordan's guy. Yeah, he's
that energy.
Drumline.
Yeah, man.
Ooh, that was
How was that? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, that was 20 years ago, man. It was at the AU Center, Atlanta. You know, a lot of people don't know that Drumline is Dallas Austin's story. Both
no question. I knew that.
ATL and Drumline are both his
Dallas
stories.
Austin, yep.
And he was a producer on both of them. I remember we did Drumline first, and he was like, I got this other movie called Jelly Beans. And he was telling me about this roller skating rink in Atlanta that him and T-Boz from TLC and all that. He's like, we used to go, and that's eventually what became ATL.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just a creative man on them subcultures. And obviously, I mean, he's one of the best producers of that generation. So he was a musician, but never knew how to read music, but was just dope on the snare. And then that's how, you know, we got that story. And, you know, me growing up almost in a similar story, teaching yourself, self-taught musician, I kind of picked up on that vibe. And, you know, you go in and that it was... It's only so many like mainstream big budget projects for our culture that come ever so often. So everybody and their mama was auditioning for it and knew about it. And so I had the relationship. And I remember even I had to have I had a big homie call the president of Fox. I had to have Will call to be like, yo, this is the kid you want.
Cheat code. It's funny you said that because we had T.I. on when we was in Atlanta like a month ago, and he said he was auditioning for the role too.
But that's the thing. That's kind of funny how, you know, even, you know, I was supposed to do, you know, the
other way.
The ATL
the
as
jelly
well.
Bean,
so
uh-huh.
That, and you always, that's funny because I'll be watching the different shows and stuff, and everybody was like, yeah, I was supposed to be this person. Mm-hmm. I was like, of course, that's what your team gonna tell you that they want you. want you to come in and read for it.
Right. Right.
But at that point, and then, you know, because everybody's doing their thing, whether you an artist or athlete or already established, but they're looking for, that's the magic about acting and about this art form, that when you know it's right, it's going to be right.
Mm.
You know, and that's the eye of a casting director, the eye of a director. So it don't even be no love lost. It don't be like you less talented than this person or anything. It's just like for what this story is.
What we're looking for.
You can be the vessel to get that there. And, you know, I just gave it my all at a young age, but I ain't had no hopes in it. I ain't know what it was going to be. Again, I just thought it was another dope opportunity to have fun. And, you know, I was going to go hard because I knew this world. And then once we went to Atlanta, it's another thing, too. I remember for, you know, Orlando Jones, originally they wanted Jamie Foxx for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, originally.
Orlando killed it, though.
Yeah, but that's what I was like. I can't even see it. It's Jamie's motherfucker. Favorite actor, but I don't think he could have been Dr. Lee. And it's funny because Drumline became one of Jamie's favorite movies. And then he was so proud of me. He's like, he knew me since I was a kid. And he's like, he would, for years, come up to me reciting lines of like, man, I love that movie. You and Orlando killed it. So it's like, the energy, it's just, when it's right, it's right.
That's what I'm saying. When it's right, it's right. Yeah. Yep.
Can you read music now?
Yeah.
I was in the choir and I played in the band in middle school, but that was the hardest thing to do, bro.
Yeah, like it's one of the, I mean, you know how I go. One, it's tedious.
Mm-hmm.
So as kids, you don't want to do it. But even now, like sight reading, like if I sit down, it's going to take me a minute. But if I just want to mess around, I can go crazy. And that's the same thing on the drums or anything. But when you got to keep that tempo and, you know, it's the language to keep, you know, the frequency moving. So. Mm-hmm. As you're reading, you got to make sure you vibe in too. So it's not the easiest thing in the world, but it's also it's simple yet complex.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between TV and the big screen?
Nowadays, nothing. Right. I mean, it's all on multiple screens now. Back then, it used to be there was some compartmentalization based off of movie stars were looked at. Yeah, they used to say Television stars are more like family because they're in your home. Movie stars are more in awe because they're 40 feet high. Mm-hmm. And then music stars are more connected to your heart and your passion because they're in your ear. And they're part, they're the rhythm and the pulse and the soundtrack to your life. So that's why being able to be a part of all three of them.
I was about to say, you fuck with all of them.
Yeah. So it's really finding a connection because ain't nothing like feeling like, you know, when you're on TV, everybody, mom, boy, yeah, I know you. You was like, they is that energy because they see you on TV every day in their house and they ain't have to pay for you to be there. But, you know, movie stars, people are a little starstruck because they see you on that big screen. And then music people got so much passion. That's why we fall in love with the Tupacs and the Waynes and the, you know, Boosies and the Mary J's and Beyoncé's because we feel like, yo, I wouldn't have made it through
without this
song or that. So it's like, I've always saw, you know, the different nature of being able to tap into each one of those and, you know, be blessed enough to operate in all of those.
Is it a movie that we know of and seen that you've turned down?
Man, we'd be here all day. Turned down or also like, you know, just...
He said we'll be all day.
Man, this game is crazy, but it's... You get to that point, and it's even after you pass the audition stuff. I've had movies that I've developed that were mine, and because a bigger actor or a bigger director would come in and be like, "Yeah, nah, I want to do that," and then the studio would be like, "Well, we're gonna make $100 million if he does it," and it's like, "Damn!" Like it was. I remember one story, man. This was another one that broke my heart because it was. I remember I was at the premiere of The Matrix. It might have been The Matrix 2, and there was this producer who produced all the Fast and Furious movies, Neil Moritz, and we was like, super cool, man. He was like, I got this great film for you called RPM. He's like, it's about a black Formula One driver, a young Formula One driver, and he goes overseas for this big jewelry heist, and he's stealing jewelry on the side while he's winning Formula One races, and his partner in crime is this big jewel thief. And it's like, we're going to get Nicolas Cage to play it. It's going to be you and Nicolas Cage, Nick and Nick. It's like, it's going to be just as big as Fast and the Furious. And I'm juiced. Like, I got the dude who made Fast and the Furious. Mm-hmm. Like, and he be putting me with Nicolas Cage, and we rocking, and I get all, we do the deal. I'm like, I'm on now. Like, I feel like, I was like, oh, this is the one. This is like, there's like, this is going to be bigger than Rush Hour and all this Nick and Nick and all of this stuff. I'm like, and then they're like, we're just trying to close up Nicolas Cage deal because, you know, we offered him $20 million, but he wants 25. And they're like, we're going to see if we can get there. And then some other producer gave him 25 to do this movie called National Treasure.
Wow. And he went there
and did National Treasure. Damn. I was like, but Nick.
Come on, man. What about me? What about me, goddamn?
Damn. But it's stuff like that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's even one of those times where it's like, I got to stop getting excited about stuff until, you know, you can speak it into existence and watch it coming to fruition, but don't start trying to scramble them eggs.
It's almost till it comes out, because sometimes you can shoot shit that never goes neither,
man,
right?
Man, there's so much. That's happened several times where we done made movies and we thought it was going to go and then sit on the shelf 5 years. Damn. And then by the time it come out, like,
lost
culture
its juice.
Shifted.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean?
World.
Like,
yeah.
So it's, you never know. You just got to be in it for the moment and appreciate the present and the gift in that at that time. Mm.
Is there anybody that you are in awe working with? You work with Samuel Jackson, Angela Bassett, Steve Harvey.
Shoot. Man, I mean, really working with Spike just as a filmmaker and watching how Spike moved, and that was... I love just who he is for the culture, who he is as a person. Spike is really that dude, man. Like, I'm trying to think anybody like that. That's the probably person I was a student of, and I was just following him around and watching how he was getting to it, and even how he was dealing with people like Wesley Snipes, and, you know, telling him where his motivation was and how to portray the character, talking to Angela Bassett, and, you know, like you said, Samuel Jackson. So I'm just over his shoulder, just peeping how the reverence that they have for him. Mm-hmm. And so Spike is probably the person I was probably in the in awe of.
How was it making Inkwell?
Inkwell? I wasn't an Inkwell.
I mean, not Inkwell. excuse me, not Inkwell.
It's
not
funny
Inkwell.
That you say that. Not I know, Inkwell. You, but the not love Inkwell. Don't cost a thing, Joy.
Love don't cost a thing. What the fuck I said Inkwell?
Because they damn near the same
movie. Yeah, love don't like, cost a thing.
You're one of the few people who pick up on that, because it's funny too. Because think about it, where we first saw
because it's a lady in this movie that I like.
You see Lorenz Tate as Old Dog and Menace, where he. Mm-hmm. You're a straight gangster, and then the next time we see him, he in the Inkwell as a straight nerd.
That's the same type of movie, too, dog. It's exact
and it's funny,
same
the same thing with me is like in Drumline, I was a little thug, and then in the next movie, you saw me, it was Love Don't Cost a Thing, the same nerd with the little twist and trying to figure out, trying to get the hot girl. Like, so I know
she was hot.
Yeah. But that, like, shoot, that girl, who was the girl in Inkwell? It was Jada, wasn't it?
Come on, man. How you not remember that?
Yeah, that was Jada.
Come on, bro.
And obviously, my love interest in Love Don't Cost a Thing was Christina Milian. So you know, it was a time.
Come on, man.
It was a time.
Christina Milian is the softest thing ever.
Stupid.
Are you kidding me? Me and my wife love Christina Milian. We talk about her. Come on, man. She's just soft.
You had the courage to share with the world.
How do you not know that?
Your illness.
Yeah.
Lupus.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, normally when people go through stuff, it's always a private, and you felt, you know, maybe, I don't know what you felt, but explain why you felt to share it with the world.
It was an interesting time. It was like 2012. I was married. I just had, you know, two kids, and to get hit with something that I didn't understand, you know, you start thinking about, like, is this hereditary? Is this, am I gonna die now, later, soon? How do I gotta figure this out? And I was like, man, if anything, if I know I'm struggling with this, there's a lot of people out here who are probably struggling with, you know, chronic illness and different situations that don't have the information that is being given to me, or even the process. So I was like, yo, I want to be able to be a conduit for anybody who's dealing with any form of illness, to be able to say, you don't have to be ashamed of it. And it was a learning process, because I was able to tap into a lot of communities, because my lupus diagnosis was also, you know, affecting my kidneys too. So there's the whole kidney disease community, and so people just embraced me, where it was a little nerve-wracking at first, because I was dealing with stuff. And you know, you get out there, and lupus is a condition where people, you can look like you're all right, but you can be going through it, like you take hours to get out of the bed type of stuff, or you just, you know, inflammation wherever it lands in your body can affect so many different things that you never even would be thinking about it. You know, the medicines can make your hair fall out, make you swell up, and all of that stuff. And so I got to still be an entertainer
right.
while dealing with this. So it was a little easier. People kind of, certain times they was understanding, like, he not on his A game right now. Give him a minute. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's, at least from my personal condition, I've learned, like, even when I do have flare-ups or little setbacks, it's always a get back. So it just, you got to just treat your body right. You got to listen to your body. And it's actually made me more health conscious and probably more aware of what's going on and focused on health and wellness than I would have ever been before. Mm. Because a lot of people go to the gym and work out because they want to look good. I do it because I want to stay alive. Mm. So it's like, I've studied every type of diet, and really you got to figure out what works for you right. in a scenario like that.
Everybody's different.
The balance of what prescribed medicines, you know, or holistic approaches. I've done it all. I've sat with every type of doctor to kind of get to that space to be the best vessel I could be.
I want to commend you, because my third oldest daughter is dealing with lupus, and some, it just shuts her down sometimes. So to see you still be able to do everything you're doing, man, I commend you, bro. Because I know how tough it could be, bro.
I appreciate it. And people don't see that, but that's, to me, when you have a condition like that, what I've learned is, like, staying active and consistently, then that prevents getting there. And that's, you know, I was in the hospital in December because I was going so hard, wasn't doing what I was supposed to do. And then once it hits you, it take you all the way out. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the thing, you're like, all right, I'm gonna do right next time. Like, you literally, like, all right, I'm not gonna let that happen again. So I think hopefully, you know, whether they find a cure or even a process, but hopefully, you know, I'll be able to ride it out as long as I'm supposed to. Like, my doctors always tell me, like, if you take care of yourself, you can live a normal life. But you start bullshitting, and, you know, it's going to take you out.
For those that, and forgive me, because I'm not very educated on the process, can you tell me, like, what a tough day is like?
Yeah, man. I mean, honestly, it's inflammation. I mean, we've all kind of dealt with that. And, like, and it's, you know, at least mine specifically, is kind of related to, like, the effects of what arthritis is.
Okay.
Or, you know what I mean? Where your joints lock up, literally. You can't move your hands. And then you start to swell up and get this stuff called edema, where it's like it's water, your body's inflaming all over. So you can't get out of bed. You can't move. And then it just feels like bad cramps.
Mm-hmm.
And then it takes a minute. Like, to me, sometimes it used to be like, I just have to, however I can make it to the shower or to the bath, and then hot water, actually, like, all right. Listen, and then from there, it's like making sure I put the right vitamins and vegetables and stuff like that, because getting your system to recognize how to get rid of inflammation. We all got remedies and stuff how to get rid of inflammation. So it's a lot of that type of stuff. And even simple ideas like green or ginger tea, like that type of stuff helps. Okay. But then, and it's usually, it's a morning time and a nighttime thing. Once I'm in the day and I'm moving, I'm active, I can do, it's cool. But then by the time the sun goes down again, that's when it's like cramping up and can't move. And then that puts a toll on your mind. And, you know, and I'm pretty sure, like, shoot, if it's inflamed everywhere else, it's probably inflamed in here too.
Brain,
so,
right.
But I think that's even now, like, I found different methods to help deal with. Like, that's why I was even saying the circadian clock thing is something that, you know, Dick Gregory even told me about, you know, back then. He was like, yo, our bodies tell you, you're supposed to go to sleep when the sun goes down. That's just human nature. He's like, that was a defense mechanism with predators, you know, back in the ancestors' days, because that's when your body really needs to recharge. If you eating and staying up during the times where your body's supposed to be recuperating, you're going to throw the clock off. And he's like, and then if you get up before the sun or with the sun, now your body gets a true chance to fill all of those enzymes and things and refresh its way properly. So now, just even with that shift in practice, I don't have to deal with a lot of those pains and stuff, because I go to sleep, you know, when my body tells me to, and then I wake up and I have that time, whether it's from yoga or meditation, to make sure I'm all stretched out, not cramped up, and I ain't got to worry about none of the arthritis. Mm.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
me and Matt, both the fathers. I think Matt is one of the guys who can be a mascot for being able to juggle a million things and be a father, and you also are a father and have a man that wear many hats. How is it juggling work and fatherhood?
Man, I love it, man. That's my first job. Like, when we talk about, it's just that there's no joy like fatherhood. Mm-mm. Man, like, when you really tap into it, I mean, we've been chasing the bag, chasing all everything we could chase out here, but when you really see the effect that you can have over your children from birth to whatever they become, like, even like, in awe of you, man, coaching and stuff like that. Like, shoot, my son got a game today that I got, you know what I mean? And, like, it's interesting because I didn't necessarily have that energy from my pops, you know, but he was present and, you know, taught me about spirituality and religion and all of that. But I never thought I'd be like the coach dad because sports wasn't my thing necessarily, but to see, you know, all of the values and how it's just even just making my kids like better people,
right?
Just an understanding discipline.
There's
so
many things you could take from sports to,
and you don't even have to implement it. You know what I mean? Like, once and you just follow their passion, and it's like, so, man, just that alone, I'll be more interested in that than anything that has to do with work or career, because I'm like, one, because, you know, I'm a psychology degree, I'm like, I'm watching their brains develop on and passion off of what they want and the people that they're becoming, and I'm just trying to support that. So I'm fascinated to understand what, like, a 5-year-old can digest and turn into, or an 11-year-old, or how they putting this together, because they way more brilliant than we ever were. And just like, whether it's the access to the technology and stuff, but it's so fascinating, man, that I learn stuff from my children every day, from all ages. I'm just like, wow, I would, you know, because I'm deep into it. Like, you know, one of my kids, he's 6 years old, in the second grade, reading at eighth grade level. Oh, but it's like, we developed, and that's credit to his mom. Like, she getting her PhD in psychology right now. So we really study the brain and how the neurotransmitters click and fire off at certain age, sensory ages, and developmental processes that when kids start to recognize language. And so it's that type of stuff, to where I'm on that so heavy that every day I'm learning something about. And then, you know, even when you think about like Freud's process of how we deal with therapy, they always take us back to our childhood. So as I'm examining my own shit and trying to be a better person through therapy, I'm watching memories that I had when I was 5 and 6 that might have shaped who I am now. And I got a 5 or 6 year old. So I'm like, let me make sure I don't do that. Or if I did make this mistake, how do I correct it now? So he don't make the same mistakes as I did, or she doesn't get put in a position. So it's crazy, man. Like, fatherhood has shown me so much growth, and really it's become my life passion.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world, in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights' sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When your child fights sleep, it can feel like a battle you'll never win. Imagine a bedtime routine you all look forward to, where you cuddle in and let the stress of the day melt away. Welcome to Sleep Tight Stories, a calming weekly podcast that brings bedtime stories, cuddles, and comfort to families worldwide. The stories are quirky, relatable, and spark wonder without overstimulation. so listeners can fall asleep and stay asleep. Each episode is narrated by me, Cheryl McLeod, a second grade teacher, and written by my husband, Clark, an eternal second grader at heart. Tune in tonight and bond over a story before drifting off to sleep. Make bedtime the sweetest part of your day. Sleep tight stories. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's the thought process behind the names with your kids? Because
that's part of it.
That's part of it.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
There's so much in a name, and it's so much and speaking things into existence. It's the power of words, and it's funny that that's why they call it spelling, because it's like we cast spells with our words. You know what I'm saying? And it's I always wanted there to be a meaning. And you know, even like some of that, I come from a culture, we have like African names, and we hear them, but we don't necessarily know what they mean.
Yeah, I wish I could have chose my name.
Yeah.
What would it have been?
It would have been a Muslim name.
Yeah.
Okay.
But even again, because there's culture to it. There's things that at least you know, it'd be like the God within, or like when you get to it, or mm-hmm. you know, a warrior chose. And I was like, I might go in that direction, but I want everybody to know what the mm-hmm. word is. So instead of, you know, naming one of my daughters, you know, a word that means beautiful. No, I want to name her beautiful.
Right.
So when you step in the room, everybody got to call her that. Instead mm-hmm. of knowing that one of my daughters is a powerful queen, I could have did that in Swahili or Spanish or any. It was like, nah, we just going to call her powerful queen. Yeah. And so everybody stepped in and got to do that.
Can you give us the list of names? And
yeah. It's felt like everybody be trying to do that. It's a game show challenge.
No, I just wanted because you're
giving
us
I got seven and a bonus daughter, yeah. And I'll be getting stuck sometimes.
Yeah. I was about to say, between y'all two, y'all could have like three NBA teams. So
we going to start a league. Yeah. Nah, but my oldest is Moroccan and Monroe. Rock and mm-hmm. Roll. I can't even take full credit for those names. That's Mariah. I gave mm-hmm. him the nickname, but Mariah always loved Marilyn Monroe. And then we, you know, the Moorish concept with me, like that. Mm-hmm. I always had a love for Morocco, and that we had a Moroccan room in the house. So that's where I proposed to her. So mm-hmm. he was like, "Yo," so that's where Rock's name came from. So, and then I had Golden, and that's the one I was talking about was literally a genius. Yeah, so it was like, the name worked.
It worked.
Mm-hmm. So it's Golden and Powerful and Rise. And then I have Zion, Zillion, Beautiful Zeppelin. We added Beautiful at the end but she had all Z names. And then we had Zen. And then we got Legendary Love. And then I got Onyx. And then my youngest is Halo.
Mm. Halo.
That's dope.
Yeah.
More?
I don't know, man. I ain't planning on it. I'm tapped out, but you know, you never know, man. I believe, you know, my 12 is right where it need to be. Mm. It's
heavy.
That's my jury. That's the mm-hmm. constellations, the disciples. We rock it. Mm-hmm. It's the dirty mm-hmm. dozen.
A parent is never supposed to bury their child.
Yeah.
My mom, I just buried my little brother, and my mom has not been the same person since.
Yeah.
And you went through that. You've been through that, losing a child.
Yeah.
So can you talk about that?
Yeah, man. It's nobody should have to experience that. I mean, we all lose people, you know, in the physical, and it actually makes you tap into your spiritual a little bit more and understand that beyond this dimension, there's so much more. And you really feel like if I've lost somebody physically, it as painful as it is, if you have a spiritual connection, you know how to get back to them and be in tune mm-hmm. with them. And you said to be absent from the body is to be present with the Most High. And if we're on that highest frequency, you know how to tap
into. They're always there.
Yeah, and it sounds a little esoteric, but it's real, you know what I mean? And only people who have lost somebody know what that is. And
right.
losing a child, man, it's like because you feel the guilt of not being able to get all that you felt like you was gonna get naturally. You take that for granted. You never think your child gonna leave mm-hmm. you. So even you don't have as many memories as you want, you know, or even, man, I wonder if he understood or if there was a connection. And then it's that space of, all right, well, if we tapping into energy, you know what I mean? is that energy living, gonna live on? Is it gonna be reciprocated? So those are the things that keep you up at night, you know. But having family and having the people to go through it with you mm-hmm. is what keeps you strong, man.
Mm-hmm.
And
support
and,
system.
Yeah, and that's and really keeping, you know, keeping the physical memory alive. You never want to run from it. People grieve differently, mm-hmm. But you gotta do it. You know what I mean? You know, you can't heal if you can't feel. Mm-hmm. So like it's you gotta feel that so you can allow yourself to heal a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell Matt this because I ain't never told this story. As soon as you hear, I wouldn't mind sharing it. It was like 3 days after my brother's funeral, and I was laying in bed with my wife, and you know my wife snored a little bit, right? So I'm up a little bit, but I'm asleep, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm thinking about my brother, so I'm mm-hmm. up crying. Mm-hmm. So as I'm dozing off, she's snoring, and I'm getting into a deep sleep, and her third snore comes out, and it says, Jack, in my brother's voice.
Mm, wow.
Through her snore.
Wow.
And I jumped up, and 2 seconds later, my mama walked in the room and said, did you hear that?
Wow.
Bro, it was the craziest shit ever.
Mm. Wow.
The craziest shit ever. So they with you, bro.
Yeah,
they with you.
He
and, I believe. But I'm a living testament of that. Wow. That's my first time I ever experienced something like that.
That's crazy.
Nah, I said, man, these different dimensions and different realms that we our spirits go to, it's real.
Mm.
We can't explain it.
Can't explain it.
But we're not supposed to be able to explain it.
Jamie Foxx, a favorite of ours, someone you've known for a long time.
The funniest episode we probably had was
Jamie Foxx.
I know he came in and turned up.
Like before the cameras even came on, we was dying laughing.
Yeah.
Explain what he's meant to you and any funny stories you could share with us.
Man, I've never witnessed somebody like that, man. Like, so talented, the most talented person I've ever seen in my life, but so kind and real, like, the life of every room he walks into, man, and just like energy always on high, keep good people around him. He a good dude. Like I've never witnessed it. And again, being a young man to be able to watch cats like him and Will Smith and all of these dudes maneuver and create their own dynasties and still just be cool.
Cool, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's crazy when you think of the heights that Jamie has reached.
Mm-hmm.
He's the best to ever do it, but the humblest dude in the world.
So cool.
Jamie's one of the best people ever. I remember when I was I posted that thing about George Floyd crying the next morning. I said I was on my way to Minnesota. I'm talking about as soon as I landed, Jamie Foxx called me. I'm on my way. I've never met him.
Yeah.
I'm on my way to stand right by your side, bro. He came down and stood by my side doing a press conference and all that. I can't say how much I love Jamie Foxx, dog.
Yeah, nah, he's a real one.
Mm. Is there anyone in kind of your space right now that you feel like could be the next one?
Yeah, man. I mean, that's what this Future Superstar Tour is about. Like, really, these young kids, man, it's a bunch of them.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's a bunch of them, man. Even from the spaces, like, the kids with the on Wildin' Out, too. Like, mm-hmm. even, like, we talking about D.C.
Yeah,
super talented.
Mm-hmm.
Got that superstar energy, but it's so many young people. I couldn't even pinpoint, but come rock with us on this tour. Yeah, you're going to see them all. You know what I mean? From Simba on down to this kid, J.D. McQuarrie. He's a singer, actor, dancer kid. He was the voice of Simba in Lion King.
Yeah, I heard about him.
Like, that's the gift that God has given me, man, to be able to be a conduit and a curator for new talent. So
are you guys in LA all for this tour?
We're in LA this weekend. We LA and Anaheim, that's where we kick it off for, and we go, then we got Texas next week, Atlanta, Miami, Chicago, all the way to New York.
I'm about to pull up on you this weekend and I ain't got nothing to do neither.
Yeah.
Your career really almost seems like you started when you was a kid.
Yeah.
But looking back on it now, and obviously we know you still have a long way to go, do you ever just kind of sit back and appreciate what you've accomplished, the doors you've opened for not only yourself but others, or is it too much of, I'm still got more to do?
I still got more to do.
Okay.
Yeah, like I feel like it's just the beginning. I feel like I'm definitely stepping to that space where the main goal is just to help people.
Mm.
It's just to do for others. I've done everything I could ever imagine, man. Like stuff that I wasn't even part of my dream have come true for me. So again, it goes back to that, too much is given, much is required, you know, and practicing compassion. That's at the highest level, at the highest frequency, like wherever I can show people that, like, yo, we chilling, we good, we you good. I'm here to do for you. Like, I'm a servant of the people.
I was blessed to be able to meet Nip, spend some time with Nip. You taking that Dr. Sebi documentary. Where's that at? Is it coming?
We still at post, man. Okay. It's because the pandemic kind of messed a lot of stuff up, you know, because we was ready to rock, and then we actually even had to add a lot of that type of stuff in there. So it's now it's just about getting it right, and for everybody involved, for Nip's legacy and family, for Dr. Sebi's legacy and family. Telling and being authentic and telling the true story and really getting to it. But I know the culture wants it so bad. You know, that's probably one of the main questions that I get asked more than anything is like, yo, when the Dr. Sebi doc dropping it? We just want to make sure, one, it's at the right platform. Because even what I promise, you know, Nipsey's family is that we going to handle it with prestige. We going to make sure that whatever we do, it got to be, you know, award-winning and world-renowned. It can't just be something that you, oh, yeah, I saw that on YouTube. You know, like, it got, and even to for Dr. Sebi's family, too, because, you know, his holistic teachings have helped so many and really can be eye-opening whether you practice it or understand it or don't. It's still about, you know, a black man who was standing firm against the system and internationally was trying to, you know, educate people about the African biomineral process. And that's a real thing. And, you know, just even what we were talking about, the body is a self-healing organism. And if you can tap into that and understand that, you know, Big Pharma don't get a chance to be a part of your healing.
Beautiful thing. Wish you the best of luck
on
that.
It's coming, though. It's coming. Yeah.
Now we got quick hitters, man. First thing to come to mind, let us know. Favorite country or city in the world to visit?
Oh, dang. Jamaica.
Oh, I ain't been to Jamaica yet. I need to get there.
What?
I've been to a lot of different places. I've been
like
to
Jamaica. Like to San Leandro. What? What?
Nah, you got to go there. Jamaica.
You got to go to Sandals in Montego Bay. Yeah. Sandals.
That's tell how you, they bro. Say it?
They got the apartments in the water. Whatever they call them shits. I don't know what they call them. It's a name. What they call the little houses in the water?
Cabanas?
Nah, it's not. Nah, that's not a cabana. Don't call them cabanas. Cabanas by the things on the side by the pool.
The villas.
bungalow. That's what they call bungalows in the middle of the water, fool. And you can look through the
thing and see.
You can look through the flow and see the fish swimming and all that. You tripping.
I bet you didn't get in that water though.
Hell no, I ain't getting in no water. You know, hey, now hell no. Nah. I can't swim.
Can you doggy pedal?
Kevin Hart said that's not how you say it. Okay. But that's what you do.
Yeah.
Dream Wildin' Out Show, head to head episode. With you watching as a fan,
who would
be on the show?
You two.
Oh, okay. Ooh. All the smoke, dude.
Let's do that. I think that'll be fire.
That would be dope. One album you can listen to on repeat, no skips.
Ooh. Probably Life After Death, Biggie Smalls.
Mm.
You a sun up, sun down type of guy. So what do you do at sun up and what do you do at sundown?
Oh, yes. Sun up, or I'm up before the sun, but that's meditating until the sun come up. You know what I mean? Watching it, that taking that time. Sundown, putting them kids to bed.
Like, showers, brush your teeth,
y'all know that
eat,
process.
Get your ass to bed.
Yeah. Soon as the sun go down. Up, it's bedtime, let's go.
Yeah.
Five dinner guests, dead or alive?
Ooh, Tupac, Martin Luther King, Dick Gregory, Marvin Gaye, Bob Marley.
It's a session. It's a real session.
Ah, yes, indeed.
Before you ask this last question, I feel like Nick is the kind of dude that's really going to help us.
No,
do this.
I'm so happy to ask him this question.
Yeah, because I feel like he's going to really help us do it.
It might be beneficial.
Yeah.
We asked a whole bunch of people this question. They just heard it and walked out. They didn't even pay attention to it. Right? A lot of people come on the show.
Pressure now.
Oh, yeah. If you could see anyone on this show, Who could it, who would it be?
But
you have to help us get your answer on the show.
You see how we gassed you before we asked you? You see how we gassed you before we asked you?
Rage!
Dang, I'm trying to think. Y'all done had, like...
We had them all.
You had Denzel yet?
No. Nope. You and Will Smith said that. Let's get it.
So we're going to have to press both y'all to get
Denzel.
Let's get
it. Let's get it.
Yeah.
Denzel?
Denzel.
Ooh, shit. We got to make that happen.
I'm putting cases on all you motherfuckers.
Because he just, he a walking, just walking wisdom, man. Like, aside from all the great performances and acting and who he is as a humanitarian, like, his with he especially because he an OG now too, so he ready to give you the game and talk. Like, he just got everything he say is a quotable.
That was T.I. said. T.I. said he calmed him down. T.I. said he was walking around like a little ant on set, just nervous. And then they're like, "Hey, sit down. Let me talk to you. They got you here for a reason."
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you can tell he's that OG.
Yeah, man.
Dope. Well, we need to get him on the show, dog.
Yeah.
Yo,
make the call.
Like, whatever we got to do.
Let's get it. Got some merch.
Oh. They got this stuff in the Louis bag or something. It's like a regular arm and smoke bag, is it? You want me to do what I do?
Sure, go ahead.
Hey, our people out there in this world. We have a nice little care package for our brother Nick Cannon. And we have in here, there's some new shit. We ain't got this. The Manscaped body wash. Okay. We ain't get this one. We got the buffer and all that. And
what else they got in there?
Nope, this is my tree. Dropped in his bag.
How'd that end up in there?
I don't know. Got some All the Smoke gear though, bro. And where could they get the All the Smoke gear so they can look as fresh as Nick Cannon?
All the Smoke got store.
Appreciate Nick, you being here, bro.
We appreciate it.
Can't let you leave empty handed.
We just want to say, man, for you, I mean, when we asked you early on, like, who you looked up to in the space and kind of modeled, like, you're that person now. You know, you're that person now, and we want to make sure we give you your flowers, man, because the hats you wear and the grind you put yourself through and you're transparent, you're vulnerable, you win, you lose, but you keep fighting, man. And we just want to say, man, we appreciate what you do for the culture.
Man, that means a lot coming from y'all, man, because you guys are doing everything that you just said, man. Like, it's real. You guys are pillars and examples, you know, to so many. Because, I mean, you went in so many different fields and accomplished your dreams at the highest level and then still can remain humble and relatable. You know what I mean? Like, it's y'all are a modern day giants in most people's eyes when you see, like, you know, from being superstar athletes and then even the platforms like this, man. I don't know if you guys understand the impact that, like, young black boys see when they see you, you know what I mean, and see what you've done and even continue on careers and continue to elevate, man. So I commend you and salute you in a big way.
We appreciate
thank you, bro. And, you know, we both, you doing things that we both trying to do. You know, he want to be behind the camera. I want to be in front. So just make sure we can get in contact with you so we can pick your brain. And, you know, because it's a lot of stuff that we don't know about the things that we getting into. You've been this your whole life. So we can pick your brain and get some advice.
I'm here.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Whenever.
Appreciate it.
Well, that's a wrap, man. All the Smoke, Nick Cannon. You can catch us on Showtime Basketball YouTube and the iHeart platform. Black Effects.
Get it.
We'll see y'all next week.
Let's get it.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.